And good afternoon. Welcome to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. It's Thursday, October 31st, also known as that fabulous Halloween, seeing great costumes all over town. And speaking of great, we have a wonderful show lined up for you today. We'll talk to Jay Query about his upcoming solo recital this weekend. We'll talk to Toby Harbinuk. He'll talk to us about his First Friday exhibit at the City Museum, First Friday being tomorrow. We'll talk to Barbara Craver also about her First Friday exhibit at the new Copa, which is a lovely place downtown. And then, as with every Thursday, we'll talk to Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up, Writer's Almanac, more here on Juno Afternoon. And here's a little bit of National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Food waste will be turned into energy at a small power plant that the Forest County Potawatomi Tribe has opened in Milwaukee. Chuck Kornbach of Wisconsin Public Radio has details.
The Potawatomi plan to use microorganisms to convert food and beverage processing waste into methane gas that will be burned to create electricity. Potawatomi Attorney General Jeff Crawford says the $20 million plant near the tribe's Milwaukee casino fits with a tribal ethic to try to protect the environment.
Marrying old thoughts of digesting food and waste product, combining them with new modern technology, and boom, here you go. We're going to be producing green energy.
A federal grant is helping pay for the Potawatomi plant. The tribe plans to sell the electricity to a local power company, providing enough energy to run 1,500 homes. But running a food waste to energy plant can be complex. Plant operator Charlie Upferman says one of his biggest challenges will be to provide the microorganisms a balanced diet, because the bugs break down the food waste at different rates.
If you look at what happens in the human anatomy, the same thing happens. Sugars flash, you know, protein takes longer, and the lipids take the longest. Yet you need, you know, a combination of all three for the tanks to operate properly.
About 20 trucks a day will be needed to bring in enough food waste, but the Potawatomi Energy Plant is in an industrial valley and not close to any residential area. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
More than 20 tribal members from reservations across South Dakota have been certified as instructors in the Workin' with Tradition training program. As Jim Kent reports, the goal is to help individuals in rural communities prepare for successful employment.
South Dakota Indian Business Alliance spokesperson Stacy LeCompte says dealing with the mainstream mindset of employment has been difficult for most Native Americans. LeCompte says the reservation system set up by the federal government discouraged economic self-sufficiency for several generations. With more and more businesses sprouting up on the reservations in recent years, LeCompte says there's a need to address the challenges that the Native workforce faces.
Some of our tribal people only work for a couple weeks and then they quit because of the family thing or because, you know, the self-esteem isn't there. Well, we're here to build that within them, to teach them about the workforce. You know, what's your home beliefs versus your work beliefs and how to incorporate that and how to deal with that.
The Working with Tradition program also teaches employees proper decision making, how to deal with stress in the workplace, and how to manage their time in order to be on time for their job. LeCompte says the goal at this point is to have one instructor on each of the state's reservations who's in a position to pass on the Working with Tradition principles to workers, such as human resource directors. LeCompte adds that some reservation organizations will travel to urban areas with large Native populations to bring the Working with Tradition principles to workers there. The bottom line, says LeCompte, is to build the character and self-esteem of Native American employees in order to help them feel comfortable in the workforce. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
The National Congress of American Indians says it's disappointed the National Football League will continue to support the use of Washington's team name. The National Native Organization released the statement after a meeting Wednesday between the Oneida Nation and the NFL. The meeting was to discuss the team name. The Oneida Nation says it's a racial slur. The New York tribe has a national campaign to change it. NCAI statement goes on to say the meeting was just the beginning of the conversation and the organization will continue to work with the tribe on the issue. Oneida Nation Representative Ray Halbritter told news outlets the meeting was historic but disappointing. The leak says names are determined by clubs. The owner of the Washington team, Dan Snyder, has publicly said he will never change the name. In October 1986, Congress enacted the Indian Alcohol and Substance Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act to appropriate funds for treatment programs. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. It's Halloween. It's a great day out there for some trick-or-treaters. Not too bad. And in the studio with me right now, I have Jay Query and Rebecca Albert. And Rebecca is on the board of Juno Lyric Opera. And Jay Query is actually having a big solo recital this weekend. So welcome to the studio. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks.
Rebecca, I'd love to just kind of get the times and the dates out there for people who are like, oh, great, I know I want to go. When is it?
Absolutely. So this is going to happen Saturday night at 7:30 in the Valley at Aldersgate Church, just behind Glacier Cinema.
Oh, great.
That's it.
And is it one show only?
Yeah, that's right. One show only and reception afterwards.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm. Okay. Fabulous. And so, Jay, for those people who don't know about your singing here in Juneau, what do you do most of your singing, and what's your experience here?
Well, probably, you know, in the last 10 or 12 years, it's been primarily with Juneau Lyric Opera, Opera to Go, and the Bach Society. And, you know, Juneau Lyric Opera got me started, you know, singing probably about 12 years ago with one of their Messiah productions. And I'd sung that as a kid in high school and really loved it. So I sang in it, and it just, you know, got me really excited. And pretty soon I was singing in operas and just having a great time. So this is kind of a, something that we talked about years ago, and I'm finally getting a chance to do it.
That sounds great. So what are some of the songs that you're going to sing?
We've got a pretty wide variety here. We've got a bunch of Italian arias, some German, Di Farella, Schubert, some Brahms, and we end up with some Gershwin and Kern at the end.
Little something for everyone.
Yeah.
That's right, you run the gamut there.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite to sing?
Oh, you know, I just like it all. my favorite right now, probably one of the Italian arias, O del mio amato ben. It's by Donaudi. And it's, just a real sweet, beautiful piano accompaniment. And it's, you know, just a real touching song about a guy who's lost his beloved and is looking for her everywhere. And just can't seem to quite get over it. It's pretty touching. I like that one.
Yeah, those love forlorn pieces are always pretty moving, yeah?
Yeah.
And fun to sing for some reason. Yeah. So you said the solo show has been in the works for a while?
Yeah, that's right. I've been lucky enough to work with Suka Zama from kind of the beginning of doing opera work with Juneau Lyric Opera.
And Sue Kazama is a local pianist and just really fabulous.
Right, and she's been here a long time. She's, you know, taught a lot of people how to play piano, and she's been, you know, kind of the pianist for a long time for a lot of recitals and operas. And the first thing I ever did with Lyric Opera was what they called these high teas, and they'd have one once a year with 30s music one year, and the next year 40s music, and that was a group of singers, that would get together, and she would, accompany us, and we'd work out our tunes with her. Sorry, that long answer. But anyway, so we would keep getting together as I was learning new music for whatever production was coming up, and these were songs that we would kind of play just for fun after we'd rehearsed for a half hour, 45 minutes. It's like, oh, let's relax and play, play this one, because it's really fun. We like to do it together. And so that's where these songs came from.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And so as far, Rebecca, as far as producing this kind of event, I know Juno Lyric Opera produces all sorts of events.
All kinds of events.
Yeah. And so what was the impetus for the organization to get this one up and running?
Well, Jay asked. I think we asked him years ago, like he just said, and then he was finally ready. And so we eagerly accepted the challenge.
Yeah.
Put it all together. And he's going to be singing in Latin and German and who knows what else, but we're going to have translations in your program, so you're going to know what he's singing about.
Oh, that's always helpful.
I always appreciate that.
For someone like me, for sure. That's great. So, Jay, how do you... And this is, you know, kind of a, how do you actually, when you're doing a solo show, does she say like, oh, well, let's try that pitch again? Is she the person that's kind of, you know, keeping you honest, so to speak?
Oh, well, yeah, Sue is a, you know, an incredible musician and very, very precise. And so, yeah, she's the one that, you know, if you're singing a quarter note instead of a half note, or if something isn't dotted, which in one of these German pieces has been an ongoing thing we've been working on. But she's very, you know, musically just, you know, perfect, and also very, you know, very sensitive to the song, the mood of the song, and the singer she's working with. You know, if you need a breath someplace, she's going to make sure you get it. And, you know, just, it, does that answer it?
Yeah, of course. And is this your first solo show in Juno?
Yeah, it is. I did a one that Juno Lyric Opera put on a few years ago called Juno's Three Tenors with Dan Crawford and Brett Crawford and Dan Wayne, and we each did a number of songs, and we did a few together, and we traveled with that to see Wrangell and Ketchikan and Sitka, and it was real fun.
You think you'll tour with this one?
I don't know. We'll see.
Well, great. Can we get those dates and the time one more time? And then where can we get tickets?
Saturday, November 2nd, 7:30 p.m. at Aldersgate Church in the Valley behind Glacier Cinema. And tickets are available at Hearthside Books and at the Jack. And you can also get them online through junolyricopera.org. And if you have any questions about anything, call JLO at 586-ARIA.
Great. And then as far as Juno Lyric Opera, I know you all stay very, very busy. So you've got this concert coming up on Saturday. And what's next on the plate for you all?
What is next? Midwinter. Holiday Pops, actually. December 7th and 8th is the performance for that. And if you want to join the choir, you could probably still sneak in. That's fun. Everybody's welcome. And then Midwinter Festival will be January the 4th, and rehearsals for that will start December 27th, right after Christmas.
That's great. And that Holiday Pops is just so much fun. It's been going on for, what, 3 years?
Six years now. Sally Smith. Yeah,
yeah,
she's
just
terrific.
It's so much fun to hear all that music and just have a really good time.
Oh, yeah.
Great. And people can find information about how to get involved on your website.
Go to the website. Yep, junolyricopera.org.
Fabulous. Thanks so much for coming on air. And we're going to play one of the songs that you're going to be singing this week, this Saturday, actually. Mm-hmm. Can you set that up for us?
This is from Donizetti's Elixir of Love, and it's called Una Furtiva. It's you know, probably one of the most popular arias of all time. So it's really beautiful.
Great. Well, Jay and Rebecca, thank you so much for coming to talk about this Saturday's solo concert with Jay Query.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Shauna.
Jalouse gardienne, ah, laissez-moi compter mes peines et mon émoi. Je veux
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Happy Halloween. And in the studio with me, I have Toby Harbinuck and Margie Hamburger to talk to us about First Friday's exhibit at the City Museum. So welcome to the studio.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, so Toby, so I read some stuff online, and this is mostly aerial shots. Or can you tell us what the exhibit is called?
Yeah. The exhibit is called Infinite Visibility. It's a series of mostly aerial shots, but a couple of ground level ones as well of Juneau and the Tongass National Forest. What I've been doing is spinning my camera around and shooting in all directions. So it's like, for those familiar with photography, it's like a fisheye lens, but the images are 360 degrees around and 360 degrees up and down. So they go everywhere. And I printed them on canvas and aluminum. Here's an example for reference of what it showed. Just to describe it for the audience, it shows the mountains of Juneau with a helicopter flying around. You might have seen on the posters, and then Juneau right down in the middle in the sky surrounding it.
So what? How do you do that?
That's what I was just saying when we were outside.
I spin the camera around on a tripod or some other kind of platform, like have an aircraft fly in circles, and take many overlapping photos and then splice them together seamlessly so it looks like one seamless image. But the images are generated from, the final image comes from anywhere from 20 to 30. And the I have one image in the collection at the museum that's actually 107 images. That's the Devil's Club shot.
Wow, 107 yeah. images.
They almost make like little worlds into themselves. As I was just saying, it's like all the things in Juneau that you recognize, but in this whole new way that's like its own planet or its own world. It's totally fascinating.
Great. So, Margie, how did you know about Toby's work, and how did that come about?
Well, the museum has opportunities, invites artists to submit applications to our solo artist program. In fact, we are right now scheduling 2015. And so Toby had submitted his application and his work, and the museum likes to feature local artists, likes to feature artists who are interpreting our community in some way or landscape in some way, in some unique way particularly. So he fit that bill on all those counts, and so... So here he is with having an opening tomorrow night at 4:30 to 7:30.
That's right. So tomorrow night as part of First Friday, and you said 4:30 to 7:30
up
at the City Museum.
Yeah. But the exhibit will be up for 2 months. He'll be there through the end of December. So there's plenty of time to see him, but of course you get to eat treats tomorrow night.
Right. So Toby, how did you get started in this kind of photography? Because, you know, I mean, I'll pick up a camera and I'm certainly not going to go in an airplane.
I worked for Aero Helicopters for a while, for about 5 years, and it provided me some interesting opportunities to explore from the sky, so to speak.
Great. So it's kind of a natural fit with work.
Yeah.
And is this one of your first exhibits? Have you had quite a few? Or?
I've had a few exhibits. I've done a bunch of First Friday shows. I've exhibited here at K2 at the State Museum and... A couple of others. I do an exhibit about once every 1 to 2 years, starting going back to 2005. I'm also at the public market every year.
Mm-hmm. And is it mostly this aerial work?
Mostly aerial work. This is my first time with stereographic work. The images that go all around, the technical term is stereographic. If you look online for planet images, you can also find them by that. It's kind of a colloquial term.
Is it stereographic?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Or planet images.
Okay. Great. And so do you do other kind of photography as well?
I do. I dabble in a lot of stuff. My favorite thing is aerial.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. And then after this exhibit, so actually people can then see you find your images at the public market.
Correct.
Great. And are these images for sale at the City Museum?
They are.
Yep. So people can bring their checkbook or their credit card. And can I mention a couple other things going on at the City Museum
before
we run out of time? So, yeah, definitely come and see this work. It's not like anything you've seen before. And also the color. He didn't talk about that, but I just want to mention the color on these images is really stunning, and the way they're printed on this aluminum is, I don't know, it's really, really luscious. So that's something that appeals to me. But I also want to let people know out there that the museum is having a couple classes for kids next week and the week after during those parent-teacher conference days. We have one on the 7th of November. It's an all-day opportunity for kids to spend at the museum and from 9 to 4:30 on the 7th, and this is for grades 3 to 5. We're going to make books and explore some of the exhibits at the museum in the morning, and then in the afternoon we're going to go bowling. And that class is almost full, so if people are interested, they should get in touch with me ASAP. On the 12th, we have a similar opportunity for the younger kids, the grades K through 2. Again, we're going to make books and do creative things like that at the museum in the morning, and that bunch is going to go ice skating at Treadwell Arena in the afternoon. So I know parents are often looking for things for their kids to do during those in-service days, so send them to me.
That's a great time. It sounds like I want an in-service day.
Right, and we have one more thing in November while I'm here. On the 23rd of November, we have our monthly coffee and collections event, which is a Saturday morning, the 23rd from 10:30 to about noon, and it's featuring a remembrance of Dale DeArmond. We have an exhibit of her work that we opened last month, and we'll be remembering her and having people who knew her on that day.
Great. And Toby, you said about that Devil's Club is 107 images. So what kind of time does it take to, you know, put these images together?
If things are perfect, it can maybe take me 15 minutes. If things are imperfect for challenges where movement causes images not to overlap gracefully, it could take me days, a couple of solid weekends.
How often are they perfect versus imperfect?
maybe 30% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a journey. I'm not nearly at the end of the journey.
And for people who want to see some images online or find out more information about your work, do you have a website that people can go to?
I do. It's alaskaimagery.com.
That's pretty specific. That's great. Well, super. Thanks, Toby and Margie, for coming on to talk about tomorrow evening's First Friday exhibit at the Juneau Douglas City Museum. And I hope it goes really well.
Thank you.
And now for a little bit of Garrison Keillor's Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 31st of October, 2013. Halloween, All Hallows Eve, the time of people going door to door, begging for candy. If you were looking for a scary story to read out loud, you could always go to Washington Irving's The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. The superstitious schoolmaster, Ichabod Crane, who was chased through the roads at midnight by the ghost of a Hessian soldier whose head has been blown off by a cannonball. Or you could look at Nathaniel Hawthorne's story, Young Goodman Brown, set in Salem during the witch trials. A young Puritan newlywed sets out at sunset on an errand through the woods, leaving his new bride, whose name is Faith, behind. Into the heart of the wilderness he goes and meets a mysterious man who leads him to a witch's Sabbath, where what looks like his wife, Faith, and the rest of his neighbors are engaged in witchcraft. The next day he's back home, but he never loses his suspicion of his wife and neighbors. He has no sense of community left, and he lives in fear and suspicion to the end of his days. Or you could look at Mark Twain's story entitled A Ghost Story, which summons up the Cardiff Giant, one of the most famous hoaxes in American history, the likeness of a 10-foot man carved out of a block of gypsum exhibited in New York City. The Lincoln Highway was dedicated on this day, 1913, first automobile road across the entire continent, gravel road from Times Square in New York to Lincoln Park in San Francisco. It's the birthday of John Keats, born London, 1795, discovered literature as a teenager, devoted himself to poetry. In 1818, he took care of his brother, dying of tuberculosis, and Keats contracted the disease himself, died in Rome, 1821, at the age of 25. It was on this day, 1517, Martin Luther posted his 95 Theses on a church door in Wittenberg, Germany. Martin Luther, a monk who disagreed with the church's practice of selling indulgences for the forgiveness of sins. Luther believed that God offered forgiveness freely without having to pay for it. So he wanted to reform the church and posted the theses as points to be argued in a debate. Had no intention of creating a new branch of the church, but that is more or less what he did do, set in motion a huge rift within the church which led to the Reformation. Here's a poem for today by Marge Piercy, October Nor'easter. Leaves rip from the trees, still green as rain scuds off the ocean in broad gray scimitars of water, hard as granite pebbles flung in my face. Sometimes my days are torn from the calendar, hardly touched and gone, like leaves too fresh still to fall, littering sodden on the bricks. But I have had them, torrents of days. Who am I to complain? They shorten. I used them hard, wore them out and down, grabbed at what chance offered. If I stand stripped and bare, my bones still shine like opals, where love rubbed sweetly hard against them. October Nor'easter, poem by Marge Piercy, from The Crooked Inheritance, published by Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles. Assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser, and it's Halloween, October 31st, a fine Thursday. In the studio with me, I have Barbara Craver. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Shona.
Yes, and we're here to talk about your upcoming, actually it opens tomorrow, exhibit, art exhibit at COPA.
Right.
Yeah, and COPA is that cool new place down, well, I guess it's down, it's in the flats, right, downtown, mm-hmm. And it's a little ice cream shop. But it's really conducive to artwork.
It's more of a coffee shop, in my opinion.
Yes, exactly.
In fact, I saw you buying some of that stuff this morning.
I was very happy about that. So, Barbara, what is this exhibit called?
It's called People Watching, and the theme is paintings of people. And they are paintings that some of them I've had for quite a while, and some are newer. Some are sketches from a life drawing sessions that I've been going to, and I do landscapes a lot, and those are shown at Kale's Gallery. But this was an opportunity for me to just sort of see what I had around and pull it together. Mark said, do you want to do a show? And it was like, I mean, you never say no.
Right.
Sure, I'd love to do a show. So then I was like, okay, what's it going to be about? And, you know, I did find quite a few old paintings and newer ones, too, that are a focus of people and figures.
So was there something about that space that said, oh, this space really needs people as opposed to landscape?
Well, I guess it's sort of just an opportunity, because my thought is maybe, you know, doing paintings of people is not the most commercial thing. I mean, especially if you get a real likeness, you just kind of wonder who else other than this person and their family
would
like to buy this or whatever, or you're doing it for that person. But then it was like, you know, this will be great. He's going to get a wide variety of people. There's kids that come in the afternoons and stuff like that. And people recognize people, or they'll recognize places. And it's such a bright and fun space that I think, you know, this will just sort of animate it as well.
Yeah, it's very inviting. And from, you know, we took a look at the work you just showed me, and the colors are so vibrant in the people. And I'm, you know, I'm just think it's beautiful, and we'll really lighten that space up for sure. So what's the major difference between the landscapes and the people?
Good question. I think they're... my thought after doing landscapes for a long time is that a big important part of the success of a landscape painting is the design, the initial composition, and where you put stuff, because it is so easy to go outside and become overwhelmed by the beauty of nature and then put the horizon right in the middle of the painting with the house that is so attractive, right? You know, and just, you know, just not really think it through because you're so excited. And the thing with people is... they're sort of inherently interesting. And I think that as human animals, you know, we just zero in on a face because it's always been important to us to know who this person is. Is this an enemy or a friend? Is this person going to attack me? Or are they, you know, somebody who looks like I could approach them? So when you're doing people, if you're doing the whole figure, you really want to get the gesture, how they are in space. And as an actor, I'm sure you're very aware of that. And as an artist, you're like, I'm trying to see them actually sitting in the chair or leaning, you know, putting, where is their weight going in the figure? That is what you're looking for. And if you're painting a face full on, then a lot of times what you're trying to go for is a likeness. You know, you're trying to make it look like that person. And that is... maybe not surprisingly, but it is incredibly difficult.
Is it because the exactness, you want to honor that exactness? Or
no,
what do you mean?
What?
Is it capturing the feeling? Or
I think what makes a likeness is the proportions of the features, in that you can see someone across the room without seeing their details, and you'll know who it is. And somehow or other, as human animals, we're good at knowing the members of our tribe. And we know, even though we can't see a person's eyelashes or, you know, the color of their skin, you know, it's like, okay, that's Shona. That looks like Shona. And it's probably because the size of your forehead versus the size of your eyebrows to your nose and your nose to your chin and where features, yeah, your hair, things that are there. Although your hair could change and your face would stay the same, and we'd still recognize you across the room. So
it's an interesting concept to really think about.
Yeah. It?
And so how do you actually draw kind of sketches first, and then you go back from there? Do you do it off of photos, or how does that work?
Both. A lot of times, well, I do have three sketches that are from a life drawing session, which is where you have models. Usually a group of people will get a model to pose for them for two or three hours with breaks. With breaks. And, you know, you are just sketching right there with whatever, pencils, charcoal. I use pastels to add color. A lot of my paintings, though, are from photographs that I take myself. And so I will take a photograph, I'll look for something interesting, and then later on work from the photograph. But I believe that I hope that my work is informed by the fact that I draw from life as well. Mm-hmm. Because the photograph is so two-dimensional, and photographs are so off in a lot of ways from real life.
So what kind of people, when you're drawing people and painting people, what kind of people are you drawn to?
Yeah, well, you know, it's always nice to have some light source so that when you're drawing, you can make things look a little bit more three-dimensional. So, you know, finding something with a nice light source. And when you're taking pictures of people, you don't want to annoy them or invade their privacy. So definitely be in a public place where people don't have an expectation that they are by themselves. I do have a couple of pictures in this show that are from photographs that I took in Hawaii, which is where I grew up and where I was visiting my folks a lot last year. And it is surprising how many people, even on the beach, are looking at a digital device. I didn't paint any of them, but I was looking for people to draw, and a heck of a lot of them were looking down in their lap at their hands with a little phone or something in their hands. It was stunning.
So why didn't you paint it? I mean, I wonder,
guess,
you know?
I sort of it's got mad. I was like, here they are at a beautiful beach in Hawaii. And I mean, a lot of them are from Hawaii, so it's, you know, it's just their backyard or something. But right. It was just like, you know, it was a little, I don't know. It seemed the wrong place to have them.
You know, I wouldn't paint it either personally,
yeah.
But then I'm thinking, well, it might be an interesting kind of historical perspective later
that
we used to do different things.
Well, you know, and when people are holding something like that, it's just not that active of a pose. I would rather have people gesturing at each other or leaning in, you know, to each other, towards each other, interacting somehow. I might do one. I certainly have the opportunity.
Like, I have lots
of
photos. So I also noticed in your paintings, you actually paint a lot of other artists. There were dancers. There was there a saxophone player or a tuba player? There's a couple of violin players, a bass
mm-hmm.
player I thought I saw. Is that something that just really inspires you?
Well, it is. I think people who are interacting with, you know, involved in something are interesting to me, I guess. And like, I've taken folk festival photos, pictures at jazz and classics. The nice thing is, a lot of times you'll get people frontal to you that don't have a lot of other people walking in front of them. So that's an opportunity. And lately, I've gone to the mudrooms events.
Yeah,
and I sit
cool.
in the front row and bring my sketchbook. Because you have somebody looking towards you for 7 minutes.
Wow,
so,
what
and,
a great
know,
idea.
That's not, they do move a lot. People move a lot. But, I mean, aside from the inherent wonderfulness of that event, it's, you know, it's an opportunity to just practice what you can get.
Yeah, people are right there.
So, yeah, I guess, I do, you know, I honor other people's art forms and focus and passion and stuff. And that's fun to try and capture.
Yeah. So, Barbara, as far as your work, I mean, I've seen a lot of your work, and it's just beautiful. And I'm, you know, what is your background? What is your background in art?
I went to law school.
Oh, of course. Make for some great paintings.
Well, it does make for a state retirement check, so I'll say that for it.
So you went to law school, but when did you start painting?
You know, I think I was actually fairly interested in arts as a kid. Mm-hmm. And by the time I got to high school, I decided I wasn't very good at it. I wasn't as good as some other kids. And so I was like, okay, well, you do what you're good at. What comes easily to you? And so since it was a bit of a challenge and I didn't have anybody teaching me how to do it, I turned away from it. And I think I have always been interested. And when I was in my 40s, I was inspired by a woman who lived here in Juneau, Jackie Kaufman, who is a painter, who is an inspirational speaker. She is just so articulate that she made art interesting to me again. And I was like, well, I'm going to give this a try. And I worked at it. And then another crucial point was getting that book, Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain.
Mm-hmm.
Because the theory is anyone can learn to draw. It's not a talent. It's not a special thing that only a few people get handed down to them. It's like, if you can sign your name, if you can learn cursive, you can learn to draw.
Barbara, you clearly have not seen my drawing. Clearly not. So then after you read that, it was kind of just the door was open and you were going for it.
I think I needed that permission to pursue it, regardless of whether I was talented or had any God-given gift. And it has proven to be just sort of endlessly fascinating and a passion that is worthwhile. And I guess I have to say it's a great antidote to being a lawyer when you're just writing briefs and memos that nobody really wants to read, to actually do something that you can hang up on the refrigerator at the end of the day, something concrete that's done. It's a refreshing difference.
That's great. And do you have a studio at your house? Is that where you work?
No, actually, I have a studio up in the Art Corps building.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's
so
great.
It's good to get away from all the distractions that are at home.
Yeah. So you have this exhibit opening tomorrow, and mm-hmm. is there kind of some first Friday? Are you going to be there tomorrow?
Yeah, I'll be there, and I think Mark is having it open until 10 o'clock at night. I'll be there probably from 4 to 6 at least, you know, depends on how much coffee I have.
Good coffee there.
And I know that he is wanting to get people used to being able to come in the evenings on the weekends. So, you know, I don't know, maybe I'll stay a little longer too.
That's great. And how long will the show be up?
I think it'll be up for the month.
Okay.
I'm not sure when the end of November is, what day of the week it is, but usually you can, you know, one artist will take, in fact, MK is taking her show down tonight, and I'm putting mine up.
Popping it up tonight or tomorrow?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Well, I'm not going to get there at 6 in the morning.
And if people definitely want to catch your work at Copa, and then you also have work downtown?
Yeah, at Kales.
At Annie Kales.
Yeah.
Great. Well, it's been such a pleasure talking to you, and yeah, have a great opening of your show tomorrow.
Thank you, Shona.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to take a little music break here, and we're going to hear a song from Cray Van Kirk. And Cray Van Kirk is actually playing this Saturday. Lots of stuff going on this weekend. He's playing this Saturday at Gold Street Music. And also at Gold Street Music, you'll hear Keith Heller and Andy Ferguson, Mary DeSmet and Greg Berger, Tahaku Gales, and then the Sean McColl Band. If you haven't got a chance, gotten a chance to see them, they're really a good time. And that's at Resurrection Lutheran Church, Saturday, November 2nd at 7:30 p.m. And here's a tune from Cray Van Kirk.
Struck silent beside her, and with a thousand thoughts I never could deny, and she said, I love you, will you hold me, and watch me jump the fire as summer turns to night, and I called to her through the sky and through the whispers of flight, I will meet you by the river's green. I will meet you by a shining sea. I will meet you as the waves march on. I will wait for you on the shores of Ireland. Time offers, we choose them, and the wildest fire can die beneath the rain. I know you silence, and at the journey's end we'll blow the fire flame, and the masks that you wear through the years they will burn as they fly. I will meet you by the river's green. I will meet you by a shining sea. I will meet you as the waves march on. I will wait for you on the shores of Ireland. The changeling turns now and sets her silver sails, until time and time and times again are done. I will meet you by the river's green. I will meet you by a shining sea. I will meet you as the waves march on. I will wait for you. And I will wait for you, my love.
And that's Cray Van Kirk playing this weekend at Gold Street Music on Saturday night. And in the studio with me, the one, the only, the lovely, the talented, dressed in some orange and black tights, it's Nancy DeCherney. Hi, Nancy.
Hey. I didn't bring my chains.
Oh, no chains today?
No chains.
Oh.
Yeah, the tights are quiet, so, oh well.
Oh well.
We have a lot to talk about, Shona.
You know, it is art, art, art all the time here in Juneau. Oh no. Last week, zombies, this week, seal.
Yes. Well, that's good. So let's run through the First Friday thing really quickly.
Yes, First Friday tomorrow.
First Friday is tomorrow, and it's a really big one. It's just building to the really biggest one, but you got to get, you like, amped up, so get ready. So I'll just do it in alphabetical order.
Alphabetical order. I
yeah,
like that.
Just because that's how we got them. Okay, sketches. Pat Race is exposing his sketchbooks.
Ooh. That sounds racy. Pat Race. Yeah, brought it.
Okay, so that's at the Alaska Robotics Gallery on Front Street. The Alaska State Museum has three new exhibits, and these will probably be maybe the last ones until we have a new museum.
Yeah,
what the heck?
So cool.
So From Out, that's local artist Dick Benedict. Ketchikan artist David Rubin has a solo exhibit, and they will be showing 10 years of Alaskan art, selections of art acquired through the Rasmussen Foundation Art Acquisition Fund. And also, I think it's from 5 o'clock. I'm not really sure what time the start is. We'll have to look on the calendar again. But Bob Banghart and Steve Hendrickson are going to talk about how they're going to be closing up some of, like, those of you who are fond of the Eagle Tree and all those sort of things, find out what's going to happen to those older exhibits and how they're being, what's going to happen to them when we reopen in the future here.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah, it's a little talk about how they're going to prepare for the changes. So that's the Alaska State Museum is free on First Friday, so go over there. Annie Kales has three artists also. Barbara Lavalle is going to have some hot tub images and some of her other things, some new stuff. Alice Tierstig will have new works, and Meg Jones, who's a jeweler. Her jewelry is by special request, is the name of the line. So check out Annie Kales. Aunt Claudia's Dolls will be open, of course. They're open both Friday and Saturday afternoon. She's showing a collection from the Philippines, and also there'll be a slideshow of a work of a doll maker that she worked with. So try Aunt Claudia's Dolls if you've never gone up there. It's quite interesting. Aurora Healing Arts is celebrating its first anniversary. That's on 114 South Franklin Street. They have Lily Kilbear, I think Clarissa Rizal, and Prince from the Alaska Railroad. Commemorative Prince. Let's see. Copa. What you were just talking
about? We
with
just
Barbara
talked to Barb. That's
yeah.
gonna, you know, those the pieces that she's got are great. They're just really beautiful.
And they're accompanied nicely by ice cream. I'm really fond of it. And they'll open until 10 p.m. on First Friday. So you can go do all your other walking around and then get over to Copa and have a nice cup of coffee and some refreshments of other sorts. Fairweather Prints will be open with Jennifer Park. This is Copper River Fleece there on South Franklin Street. Hearthside Books has a book signing. Catherine Hawker and Cheryl Cook are signing their book, When You First See the Flukes, I think is what it's called. I have the wrong title of it here, but it's about flukes.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's in the name. Let's see. The Juno Artist Gallery is featuring Diane Anderson. She's been working in canvas, on silk, and doing etched plate prints. So she'll have her works featured at the Juno Artist Gallery in the Senate Building. We have a wonderful set of things going on. Let me see if I can remember them all. First of all, Jim Fowler is exhibiting his original children's book illustrations. As you know, Jim has illustrated many, many children's books. I can't even remember, but Patsy Ann and Benny's Flag, and it just came out. He and Susie just released Aesop's Fable. So he'll have the originals from a lot of those books. And we will actually have a story time next week. I'll talk about that. Where we'll read from those books, and you can see how the books turned into books. Anyway, that's what's opening. We'll have, I think there's a couple of jewelry artists, and then at 8:30, the Cook County Blues Band will be having a Day of the Dead dance over there.
That's so cool.
It's going to be fabulous.
No, they're so talented,
yeah,
the Cook County Blues Band.
I've been listening to them rehearse. It's wonderful. $10 for that, and it'll be a fun night. The Juno City Museum has Tony Harbinek's photography. Infinite Visibility is the name of the show. And they have Allison Kane's jewelry featured in the gift shop.
So he was just here to talk to us about the images. And mm-hmm. he showed me one. And these are just pretty mind-boggling. I mean, my brain can't really take it today. But it was awesome. I mean, it was just so much depth there.
He's had a couple of exhibits here too, as I recall, and mm-hmm. yeah, his stuff is amazing. So it's really inspirational to wander around and see all these. And speaking of photography, the Juno Photo Group will be in the Wassman Building, 228 Seward Street. They're starting a little bit before 4:30 and on through the evening. Mountainside Wellness encourages you to take a healthy holiday challenge, and.
They mean Halloween?
It is scary. This is your kickoff, and I think you can win fabulous prizes. So she's over in the Articourt Building on 4th Street. K2, you have a beautiful exhibit here.
We've got the Monday Night Sewing Circle and the Gold Street Quilters, and these quilts are beautiful. They're up, and they're for the Aware Shelter and children in foster homes. And we have a First Friday opening tomorrow, 4:30 to 6:30.
I was just struck by the little monkey one as I was coming up the stairs. How cute is that?
Super sweet. Little banana?
Yeah. So stop by when you're over at you come to the Jack and you get your little map, and then you go over to the Alaska State Museum, and then you swing by here and look at the fabulous quilts. The canvas has Faces and Places, an exhibit by Marianne Manning. And, of course, Pie in the Sky will be open, so you can press on, get a little refreshment there.
And head on over to Mountainside Wellness.
Exactly. Challenge yourself. The Rookery has Crabstract by Julie Crabtree. She's a variety of different things that she'll be putting up. So it's a really nice day to be out wandering around. Now, of course, today is Halloween.
Indeed.
And in unrelated news, the Sitka Whale Fest begins. I'm not sure why those are connected. But
that was
a
great segue. I loved it.
Halloween at Kapa, they're going to be open for trick-or-treaters. Blood sherbet. And caramel candy corn ice cream cone. Let's see, there's trick-or-treating kind of like everywhere. There's at the Nugget Mall, there's the Haunted House, the Boy Scout Goblin Golf, and Helping Hands Carnival. Theater in the Rough opens with a free preview tonight of their Ladies of the Camillas. A really nice review of that in the paper.
Super funny show.
Very funny show. It sounds like what we need is a little outright prolonged laughter, and this is where we're going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, Gold Town is showing Attila, Old Hun, the Hun, as zombie, I guess. Are we done with the zombie thing? That was so last week.
That was so last week. But we're not. Okay. It's never done.
It's never done. They keep coming at us. And I believe that there is perhaps a 7 o'clock and a 10 o'clock showing that involves toast.
It involves toast
and
rice.
Time warping. They don't want you to bring that, though.
No, no rice.
No.
No.
And no toast.
And no toast.
But if you know what we're talking about, then you should go.
If you can dance like Frankenfurter.
Yeah. Okay. So that it's Halloween and it's a tradition. And, there you have it. Okay. As we mentioned, Friday is First Friday. There is an arts and crafts collectibles fair going on out at the Nugget Mall all weekend. Gold Town is showing Inequality for All. It's a documentary. This is various times through Sunday over the weekend. At 5 p.m., NaNoWriMo, writing, is a kickoff event for writers at the Silver Row Back Room.
Cool.
And apparently various famous books, such as Water for Elephants and stuff like that, the whole point is to get a book written in a month.
Yeah, it's a really hot national challenge. I have a lot of friends who are on board.
Okay.
It's all over my Facebook right now.
Okay. So we expect to see several large, wonderful books come out of Juno. As a result of this, there is a Dia de los Muertos dinner at Rainbow Foods at 5 o'clock, and the Traveler Duo Live Jazz with Doug Bridges and Jim Noel is happening at Zephyr. There is actually, and I forgot to mention this, there is also live music at Rainy Retreat. It is, name will come to me later. But anyway, they're starting at 5:30. So when you're out walking around at things, stop in at Rainy Retreat as well. Evening at Egan is Juno's Burners Bay, a living laboratory in environmental change. We have too many things there. John Unziker is live at the Gold Room Baranoff. We mentioned Ladies of the Camellias. There's a Day of the Dead dance at 8:30 p.m., as we mentioned, at the Jack. UAS Rec Center has First Friday featuring Wool Pullers Live. at 8:30. There's a Halloween bash at McGivney's with rock and roll band and a costume contest.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah, that'll be fun. And then 10 p.m., there's Scorcher Halloween, ska, rock steady, garage rock, soul, psychedelic, world music at the Rendezvous starting at 10 p.m.
Have you heard that Scorcher guy?
I have not.
It's pretty cool.
All righty.
Yeah.
It seems a fitting sort of evening. Saturday, let's see, Shoefly is having a big annual blowout shoe sale.
What?
I
when?
Just thought I
what?
Should mention that.
Wait, how did I not know about this? When is
now
it?
Now you do.
Okay.
It's all weekend on Saturday. So there's a lot of sales going on, and you're going to need new shoes to do them. At 9 a.m., K2 is having the used record and CD and video sale. That's
always
happening
a good
here.
Time.
Yeah, who knows what you can find, you know? There's a youth portrait drawing workshop happening over at the State Museum, and there's the annual ski sale. Doesn't seem like it's going to snow, but
it will.
It will, and you're going to need new skis. So it's over at Centennial Hall starting in the morning on Saturday. Always a packed house there. Let's see. The DAR is having a lineage research workshop at the Valley Library at 10:30 in the morning. Let's see, the Spirit of Fall Carnival. There's a Juno Douglas cheerleader team fundraiser in the Commons at JDHS. There's Gold Town is having a Snowember movie series, Mount St. Elias. This is a ski documentary at 2 and at 9. 3 p.m. on Saturday is the 75th anniversary celebration for the Shrine of St. Therese. That's a whole lot of really, I know Full Circle Music and several other music groups are performing. It should be, it's a lovely time to go out there and see that. Jay Query is having a solo recital. He and Sue Kazama is accompanying him. That's at 7:30 at Aldersgate Methodist Church. Gold Street Music is performing at Resurrection Lutheran Church. Sunday we have the Ukuleles. 7:30 on Sunday, we have a pay-as-you-can preview of Treasure Island.
That's right, the first pay-as-you-can preview. Arr. It is so R everywhere. Did you see that pirate movie that came out last week?
No.
It was rated R.
It was totally rated R?
Yeah, I know. All day. Nancy, I could go all day.
Okay. Monday through Wednesday, the Southeast Watershed Symposium is happening over at Centennial Hall. There's a poster session and social at 5:30 on Monday. Let's see, Tuesday we've got the Chamber of Commerce having a whiskey tasting at the Jack. Now, I understand that these tickets sell out, so if you want to go to this whiskey tasting, they're bringing in some kind of whiskey special guy.
When is it, Tuesday?
It's at Tuesday, and you need to call this Chamber of Commerce and get your ticket now, because they didn't give us any of them, so woo. Let's see, there's a Glacier Highway Bike and Pedestrian Improvement Project public meeting at the Greening Park office. That's Tuesday at 6 p.m.
That was a mouthful. Well done.
Yeah.
Well done.
7:15 Fall Salsa Workshop, Refining Our Basics. That's at the Juno Urgent Care upstairs. And I think that's free. And there's a Klan conference starting on Wednesday at 6 p.m. The open warming of the hands opening ceremony is at the Jack. There's a Road Capacity Improvements Project public meeting at Floyd Dryden, also at 6 p.m. At 7 p.m., Goldtown is having a conversation, 7 p.m., coming out action and reaction. These are two people who will be talking about how it, what is their responses to people who've come out or people who were talked to them about coming out. Anyway, that's at 15 at PFLAG sponsoring that at Goldtown on Wednesday at 7. The UAS Native Film Series begins, and that's also at 7 p.m. Survival Prayer is the thing that's happening. I think, the story time is at 2 p.m. next Thursday with Beth and Sarah from the library, who will be reading the books of Jim Fowler. Did we make it?
We barely made it. Amazing. Nancy, you're a gem. Juno is so amazing that way. It's so much going on all the time. And if you want to check out that calendar, you can check it out at jahc.org, or you can also
ktoo.org.
Perfect. Nancy DeCherney, always a pleasure, especially in those really great Halloween tights.
Thank you.
Thank you. And have a fabulous Halloween evening, and do some great trick-or-treating, and have a great day.
Google and Yahoo say the NSA tapped into links to their data centers without permission.
But since those days...